each door. Butlers and maids galore. But one day Dan, a kitchen man, gave in his notice he's through. She cried, oh, Dan, don't go. It'll grieve me if you do. I love his cabbage, crave his hash, deppy about his sucker taste. I can't do without my kitchen man. While about his turnip top, likes the way he warms my chop, I can't do without my kitchen man. Too much to me, and you ain't heard the half. Oh, his jelly roll is so nice and hot, never fails to test a spot. I can't do without my kitchen man. His frankfurters are all so sweet, how I like his should meet. I can't do without my kitchen man. Oh, how that boy can open clams, no one else can touch my hands. I can't do without my kitchen man. He can use my sugar bowl. Oh, his bologna's really worth a try. Never fails to satisfy. I can't do without my kitchen man.
Brooklyn, and this is Reciprocity Radio. I am your host, Amanda, and I'm here every Sunday at 5. Reciprocity Radio is a show about food, cooking, eating, drinking, all that fun stuff that we do every day and share with our friends and loved ones. And yeah, thanks for tuning in to Radio Free Brooklyn. The first song you heard was Kitchen Man by Bessie Smith, because this is a cooking show. I'm excited to be back. Last week I had a guest host. I have yet to upload that show, and I just remember that right now. But I had a wonderful guest host, so I look forward later tonight to having that episode uploaded on reciprocityradio.com. I have a tiny amount of housekeeping to do re that website. Reciprocityradio.com not only has all the episodes of this show, but it also has all of my recipes that I've worked on or talked about in the show. It also has blog posts and all kinds of fun things, and I added a new feature this week, which is Cookin' Kitchen. Probably needs a new name, but it's playlists and albums that I love to cook to. So that is a new feature on the website. I just kind of had this moment where I was like, this is my website, I can just do whatever I want. I was like, okay, great. And I put up a couple records that I really love, full-length records, everything's shared on Spotify, and then a couple of playlists that I've made myself. So that you can check them out. I will be updating it pretty frequently as I continue on. And I'm a big fan of LPs and records, so I often like throw something on when I'm cooking, so I tried to do a little bit of both. So maybe you'll find something you like, or I don't know. But check it out. It's Cooking Kitchen. It's right there on the front homepage, on the bottom right-hand corner. So I think you're going to like it. Maybe. I don't know. I also like to cook to the radio, so thanks for listening. And I love listening to radio at home. I think that's kind of why I actually heard Cooking Kitchen on WBGO, or sorry, Kitchen Man on WBGO. And it was a different artist, but I was listening to their blues segment that they do during the afternoons while, you guessed it, cooking. So that was a kind of fun find. And then I was like, I'll just go with this, because I'm also going to talk about why I was gone last week. I was in Nashville and also all over the country, because I drove to Nashville and back with my partner. And we had a blast and ate so many good things. So I'm excited to tell you a little bit more about that in a second. But yeah, it's nice to be back. I missed it. And I thought a lot about what I wanted to cook. And when I was gone, I had a great time. We ate and drank and danced and did line dancing, and Dimitri wrote a bowl, and we did a lot of karaoke, like a lot of really fun things. We really packed it in for having driven halfway across the country. And it was a blast, but when I could not wait to get home and cook. Like, I just couldn't. I was so excited. Like, I missed my kitchen more than anything. I mean, I missed my cats, which, by the way, shout out to Lilu, because it's her birthday. She's 10. I know. She's 10, and she spent the morning screaming at me, so thanks. Thank you to my cat for having a terrible attitude her whole life and never changing. We went to Nashville. We stopped in West Virginia. And we did a lot of things. I did an episode, which is on reciprocityradio.com, before the trip, kind of playing you some of my favorite country tunes and talking about the history of hot chicken and biscuits, all the different types of ways that word is used, and also just the history of biscuits in general. And that was really fun. And I knew I was, like, excited to do hot chicken, but I am not a person who can handle spice very well, despite the fact that both of my parents love it. I really can barely do it, but I knew we had to do it because that's a Nashville thing. So we did get to that, but that episode was really fun because it went in depth in the history of that dish, and I really enjoyed talking about that. We actually went to a place called Party Fowl, which is party F-O-L, or F-O-W-L, like a bird. Like, and it was really great. And very spicy. I could barely eat it, but my partner loved it and had a great time. He got fried chicken poutine. So, and there are other things. We went to Biscuit Love, which is a biscuit restaurant, and it was amazing. We had these little donut bites that were basically fried biscuit dough with like a really wonderful blueberry compote and lemon ricotta. It was like, I was like, I know we're ordering way too much food, but I have to order this because it sounds amazing. And it was. So I recommend Biscuit Love. And I had a really good time in Nashville. But then on the way back, as we were coming back, we drove from Nashville to Dollywood, which I guess I should talk about. I'm sorry, I'm just telling everyone about my vacation. Thanks for listening to my summer. We went to Dollywood. It was absolutely incredibly overwhelming and really fun and really hot. And I didn't actually eat any cool food there because I was so full from everything else that we ate. But they have a lot of really interesting like homestyle things. There was like a beans and ham restaurant, like all the stuff, which maybe someday I'll get back there. I've heard it's really nice at Christmas or the holidays. But I got kettle corn. It was a really lame. That was it. I mean, we were starving, but also like nauseous from eating heavy food. So we left Dollywood. I was pretty much having like heat stroke. It was very hot. I don't ride roller coasters. My partner does. So I was like wandering around really hot, just basically refilling my seltzer over and over again. And they don't really have seltzer in the South, which is the thing. And I was kind of weirded out by that, but it's fine. And we're almost done. We just leave the museum, the Dolly Museum, which was really amazing. And it just starts like raining. And then we're like, okay, this will pass and we'll stay and we'll ride the train, because that was the one thing I wanted to do. But it was shut down because of lightning. And it just fucking started pouring, like a torrential downpour. So we leave Dollywood. Not only am I sweaty, I had to buy a tie-dye t-shirt to put on because my other shirt was too hot, which I don't mind because it's awesome. And then we get soaked. So our clothes are disgusting and we're wet in the car, which is starting to smell like mildew because we're like soaking wet, sweaty people. We're just like, fine, let's just get out of here. Dimitri wants to get a baked potato and steak or something like that. And I was like, that honestly sounds good. That's kind of what I was raised on. I was born in Oklahoma and very like meat, potato side kind of family early on in our life. My mom is an excellent cook, but when we were younger, we ate a lot of that. I was like, that actually sounds good. A baked potato sounds soothing. Fine. And he's like, cool, let's go to a Longhorn Steakhouse. And I'm like, okay, yeah, this is like hilarious. Let's do it. And then Dimitri somehow finds out of the middle of nowhere, Tennessee, I'm not even sure anymore, this restaurant that like, we don't know how it existed. It was so beautiful and there was no cell service. And it was just like off the side of a road in between two giant fields of like corn and wheat. It was like almost dusk. I had to like change in the backseat of the car so I look like an actual human being. And we go in and it was like we were out of time. It was like the movie Big Fish, where you like he stumbles into that magical village where they're all having a great time and the food's good and he's like Daryl dancing. It was like that. Everyone knew each other. Everyone was like, hi, how are you doing? Great, how's your kids? Like everyone, I was like, is the mayor of whatever town this is here? Like, how does everyone know everybody? They all knew each other. We had to wait a long time to get our orders in because the restaurant was like slammed. It was Memorial Day weekend. So I think they were the busiest they'd ever been and it was not even too bad. But we had like, I don't know, we got steak and he got surf and turf at a restaurant in the middle of Tennessee. And I got the steak and potato and it came with soup. And the soup was like this white bean tomato soup. And it was basically the first thing I ate that was like nourishing the whole trip. Not that the food was bad. We just ate a lot of like heavy food. And I was so like relieved to just eat something made out of vegetables, not fried. I became kind of obsessed. So the first thing I did when I got home, I should tell you the name of this restaurant, by the way, I recreated the soup. So I was pretty excited to try that, and I was just like, couldn't explain how, I can't even explain how good it felt to just like think of something and remember it and think, okay, I'm not even gonna look at a recipe for reference, I'm just gonna start. Like, this is an adventure, I'm just doing it. And it's soup, so, you know, whatever, but a soup adventure, which I'm excited to talk about today because it's finally like cold. It's kind of chilly. I know it's not gonna stick, but we're getting there. And autumn is absolutely my favorite time to cook. And I was saying this out loud earlier, and I was like, well, I do love spring and summer. I mean, winter. And then I was like, okay, I just like cooking. Let's just say that. But soup, though, is so much fun to make. And I've learned a lot over the years about that, thankfully, to lots of practice. Let me find you the name of the restaurant. What was it? Oh, my gosh. Anyway, we had our steak, and the soup just basically was, like, enough for me. I was like, this is so good. It was called C.J. Papa Dops Food and Fountain. I don't even know where it is, but C.J. Papa Dops and the tomato soup. So later this evening, I will be posting the recipe for that soup. I recreated it. I basically used the recipe. It's already on my website, reciprocityradio.com, for white beans, a really simple white bean from dried beans. You don't even have to soak them, although you can if you want to. And I used the cooking liquid and soaking liquid to make a stock, basically. So you don't throw out the water. You use that, all the good, like, kind of rich flavor. And I don't know the word here, but, like, it's, like, thicker because the beans have been soaking in it. Like, similar to a pasta water has starch. The same thing happens when you make beans from dry. And I use that as the base with, like, some tomato paste and onion. My friend Spencer, who's again following me today in the studio as I just ramble, suggested bacon, and that was an amazing addition. So I'm excited. I just haven't finalized the recipe, even though I wrote out exactly what I did. I will finish that later, and I'm excited to make it again. Literally today I was like, oh, I wish I had that soup. Anyway, CJ Papa Dops in the middle of nowhere, possibly Tennessee, possibly Virginia. I don't know. It was just one of those like surreal dining experiences, and everything slowed down, and you couldn't look at your phone, and there was a cat. We never found out the cat's name. And that was just kind of hanging around begging for scraps and pets. And it was just like the best thing ever. That is what I was. That's where I was. talking about soup. And I think it's also like, I wanted to bring it up because I think it's like sometimes it's just the simplest things. And also the situation, like who you are sharing it with, that makes it so memorable. So from now on, whenever I make this soup, even though it's something I would have ordered anywhere because I love white beans, I'm going to think of CJ Papadops and this random place and my partner telling me, okay, drive 7 miles off the highway to a place that we're not sure exists because we really didn't see anything like in between. No cars, no people, no houses, just nothing. And then we're going to sit down and wait an hour to order steak. But it was perfect. It was really perfect. And I don't know, should I tell you about other things I did in Nashville? If you're out there and thinking about Nashville, I can recommend some places. Biscuit Love has multiple locations and was amazing. We never made it to Hattie B's or Prince's, but my friend Dana is down there and I saw a picture of her meal from Prince's and I was like, oh my god, we have to go back immediately. It looked unreal. So I'm definitely going back. I loved being there. We had lots of really good drinks. Oh my gosh, we went to a really good cocktail bar that I'm now forgetting the name of. Oh my gosh, no. Anyway, I'll come back to it. It was on Anthony Bourdain's Parts Unknown in Nashville, which you should watch because he introduced Margot Price and the singer Allison something of the Allison Moss of the Kills. And oh my god, we went to Santa's, which was unbelievable. Santa's is like a dive bar in kind of a trailer type house. And people smoke indoors, so we really had to like leave almost after less than an hour because I couldn't take it and my throat hurt like 2 days after that. But it was a karaoke bar, and I go up to the guy because we walk in and people are already like wasted because I think college football had started that weekend. There were people wearing like jerseys and they were already drunk, and they're like, they point at us and they're like, y'all sing? And we're like, I'm like, yeah, I do. And the girl goes, can you do Jolene? Which I later did, but she had left. But I was like, yeah, I'll get to that. I asked the dude, I was like, hey, do you have Margot Price's Heartin' on the Bottle? That's like my favorite. I look for it everywhere. And he's like, we don't. It's because like Jack White doesn't release, they just don't like license that stuff. But I'm really good friends with her husband. And I was like, oh, wow. Well, I finally got my answer. And I was like, well, if you see her, tell her, you know, I would love to do this at karaoke. But I did a bunch of other goofy things like Tammy Wynette and Loretta Lynn and Dolly, of course. So, I would absolutely recommend Santa's. And I'm trying to think of anything. Robert's Western World was amazing. We did not get the fried bologna, but it was really great music. And in the midst of all of those neon-signed places, it can feel overwhelming. You could walk in anywhere and see anything. Robert's Western World had like awesome music. They were very nice. I loved that a lot. I'm glad we got to go in there. It was really traditional songs, and that was recommended to by my friend Robert. So I was like, is this because of your name? But it was awesome. And we went to Lonnie's karaoke bar, which was a very interesting experience, but I do recommend it. And you basically like, it's a Western bar. You sing, you don't have to sing Western music, but I did. And you go, basically the bar, the karaoke stage is like behind the bar. So it's awesome. Definitely like deep south, but really pretty nice. There was a support Trump sign and I was like, oh. But you know, whatever, I guess. No, I mean, not really. I don't know. I was not happy about that, but we came, we sang, we left. We didn't nag into a fight. So we did it. And that was really fun. Recommended to me by my friend Brad. So yeah, I had a lot of fun in Nashville. Now you've listened to me talk about it for 20 minutes. I recommend Nashville. It was very good to see my two friends, Robert and Dana. We were all in college together. Robert and I went to high school together. So yeah, so it was awesome. We had like, for a 3-day trip, we had a really fun time, ate a lot of good stuff. I will be writing up everything that we did on reciprocityradio.com in the blog section, and I'll link to where we ate, and I'll also link to things that I've been recommended that I didn't get to, because I of course intend to come back. So yeah, Anyway, I will mention now that our backing track is Country Kitchen by John Williams. And I'm going to give you another blues song by Lillian Miller. It's Kitchen Blues. And I'll be right back. We're going to talk about plum torts and cacio e pepe. By Lillian Miller. I had an interesting experience today trying to find. I was looking for Kitchen Man, and then I found hundreds of blues songs that were like Kitchen Blues, Kitchen Sink Blues, Empty Kitchen Blues. There's a lot. So I talked about the soup that's gonna be on later, and I've completely made myself hungry by talking about it. It was so satisfying and honestly like the easiest thing and cheap, like super cheap to make a soup from dried beans and use tomato paste instead of any, you know, it's, I'm so excited to share this recipe. I'm excited to cook it for people too, which is a good feeling. I feel like traveling like reinvigorated me in some way, in a really good way. Like, it's nice to be out in the road. It was nice in a way, even though being in the car can be grueling, to just see so much of our country. It was really beautiful. Right before I left, I'm going to actually run the search right now. Right before I left, I saw Bruce Springsteen on his solo show. Oh my God, there's this thing called Hungry Heart Recipes to the Rescue. I saw Bruce Springsteen do his Broadway performance, and it was really great. It was really inspiring and just honest and open and engaging and really like invigorating. And then the next day in the morning, we got in the car and just like drove to West Virginia. So I was like, this guy, no one loves the road as much as Springsteen. And that's like the whole thing. That's why he wanted to do what he did, because he just was like, I love to be on the road. I got to get out of here. And it was like the perfect timing. Like the fact that I had tickets for that, which I bought like 8 months before it actually happened, after like 3 lotteries to try to get the ticket, threw off our trip. We were going to try to go to New Orleans too, but I was like, I don't want to rush that. So I'm glad it all worked out. We did a lot, but Nola's coming. I hope I get down there soon. I was just like, does Bruce Springsteen have any recipes? I don't know. There's this Hungry Heart recipe of Do the Rescue. Recipe book personalized with wonderful fan stories. I'm going to have to look into this. I'm also really excited. This is going to come. This is another part of the website. I'm still trying to figure out. Like, I'm always fussing with things. But I want to start reviewing cookbooks or kind of tell you about them or recommend them. And I just picked this up and I'm so excited. Like, I read it and I just like, I immediately was like, this is going to be fucking awesome. I mean, I'm sorry about swearing, but I was really, really, really pumped. I bought this book called Six Seasons, A New Way with Vegetables. It's by Joshua McFadden and Martha Holmberg. It is absolutely, first of all, it's just an absolutely gorgeous book. Like, as an object, it's beautiful, printed beautifully, just gorgeous. But it is completely the way that I think it starts off with, like, very simple but straightforward things. Very simple things. And that's, I think this whole book is basically written about how to best appreciate produce in its prime. And so the seasons are, there are 6 seasons, winter and autumn, late and early summer, and late and early spring. And it's just incredible. It's not completely vegetarian, if that throws you off, it's not. But it's just basically teaching you how to basically get the most and best flavor from things as they are pulled from the earth, like in season. So I'm going to read just what this says on their website. But Joshua McFadden, chef and owner of renowned Trattoria Ava Jeans in Portland, Oregon, is a vegetable whisperer. Yeah, Portland. And after years of racking up culinary cred at New York City restaurants like Lupa, Momofuku, Blue Hill, he managed the trailblazing 4-season farm in coastal Maine, where he developed an appreciation for every part of the plant and learned to coax the best from vegetables at each stage in their life. In 6 Seasons, his first book, McFadden channels both farmer and chef, highlighting and the evolving attributes of vegetables throughout their growing seasons, an arc from spring to early summer to midsummer to the bursting harvest of late summer, then ebbing into autumn, and finally the earthy, mellow sweetness of winter. Each chapter begins with recipes featuring raw vegetables at the start of their season, and as the weeks progress, McFadden turns up the heat, grilling, steaming, and then moving on to sautés, pan roasts, and braises. His ingenuity is on display in 225 recipes that celebrate flavor at its peak. It is a gorgeous book. I'm like, my mom saw that I post something about it, and she's like, I need to get that, so I need to bring that to them, because I'm they're building upstate, and I'm already like, where can I secretly plant vegetables all over this land that they don't. I don't want to ruin their landscaping, but, you know. Anyway, since I couldn't pronounce that word, revelatory, I wanted to bring up what's happening here on the show today, which is I'm very of the moment sort of person when I write, and I wrote this down last week, and I wrote, it says RRR, but recreate, revisit, and recommended. And recreate is, these are my challenges to myself. Although you can use them too, obviously, listeners out there listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, you can obviously use them. It's easy because it's like RRR. And of course, the show is called Reciprocity Radio. So we have a lot of R's for not being a pirate. recreate is something like, this is what I did with the white bean soup. I was like, I love this dish and I'm going to endeavor to make it on my own, no recipes, sort of like a Cook's Illustrated style of like, this is, I'm going to learn on the way and tweak things as I go. Revisit is come back to recipes I've made before, but I think can be better, or maybe there's a new way of thinking about it. And recommended is the, like, someone said this was amazing, and multiple people said this is amazing. Like, heard about it, you have to try it. So that's coming up. We're going to talk about the plum tort. From the New York Times. It is famous. And I actually recorded myself making it because I was pretty sure that it wouldn't work. and that it wouldn't be as good as it was, but it was very, 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 very good. Very good. And I'm shocked. Now I'm like, great, now I have the cake that I'm going to make for the rest of my life, which is why people rioted when they stopped printing it. Revisit for me was Cacio e Pepe this week. The first recipe I ever wrote on reciprocityradio.com is for cacio e pepe with lemon. It's a little bit out there for the traditional recipe, but I put lemon zest in mine because I love lemon pasta and I was trying to figure out how to do it. We have a studio visitor. I'm going to turn the mic off really quickly to answer a question and an answer. Lisa Levy just stopped by to send us some flyers. So my first thing I ever wrote for the website was cacio e pepe. It's a very like easy dish, but also controversial in that it is very hard to get right for like being three ingredients or something. And Smitten Kitchen, who if you follow me, you know I love Deb Perlman. She wrote a new way of doing it this week. So I tried it, and I don't think I did it right because it did not work. But I'm going to try it again. But it was revelatory to me because I had never even thought of this in my life. If you don't know the dish, cacio e pepe is a Roman dish. It's Parmesan or Romano and pepper. And that's like mostly it in pasta. Like you use the pasta water to help bind the cheese into a sort of sauce. Pepper is spicy. And cheese has like this umami and salts and like sweetness if you get a really good cheese. It's super easy. It's like something you can throw together in your sleep when you know how to do it, but it takes a while to get the technique right. This recipe that she wrote does not have that technique at all. She blends water and cheese and pepper into a paste, and then you will take that paste, put it in a bowl, and when your pasta is finished or al dente, you toss it in the paste, and it cooks, air quotes, in that sense. So you can also add pasta water to that to help it sort of mingle better. But I tried this. I think my issue was that I made it for just me, so I didn't have enough. I didn't use the full recipe, so it was hard to blend up a small amount of cheese and water correctly. I think if I made a full recipe, it would have worked a lot better in my food processor, and I might have had a better result. On her website, it looks absolutely stunning, and this is like a make it in 20 minutes and you have a really good satisfying meal kind of thing. Probably even less than that if you just boil the water. You can make the paste while the pasta's cooking. So I revisited that. That was a trial. It didn't cohere for me, but then what fixed it was just dumping the mixture into a pan, heating it for like a minute, and it worked fine. So that was really good. Maybe I'll come back to it. I went to a really good restaurant yesterday with my parents, but I'll come back to it. But they had a lemon cacio e pepe on the menu, and I was like, yes, I feel validated. So my recommended is the New York Times plum tort. And this is very similar to a cake I make all the time, all summer, which is the Smitten Kitchen blueberry buttermilk, or it's raspberry buttermilk cake. It's on my website. It's blueberry buttermilk cake because I often use blueberries instead. It's almost the same thing, except for there is no buttermilk in this cake, which is called a tort. And I was going to read you a little bit of the story behind this. It's written by Marion Burroughs, who was a food reporter for the New York Times. And she wrote the plum tort recipe in September of 1983. And it was published. And what follows is the history of this recipe. This is from the New York Times. No one expected it to become the most requested recipe, and among the most beloved in the history of the newspaper, it certainly appeared without fanfare. Nestled in the bottom left-hand corner of the page, accompanying a brief report about the arrival of the Italian plum season, which is just with just 8 ingredients and a few short steps, it didn't seem to have all the makings of a hit. Yet after the fact, the newspaper received so many requests for the recipe that the editors decided to reprint it in the following year, and the next, and each subsequent year, until they decided it was time to put an end to the madness. In 1989, they ran an updated version, 3/4 a cup of sugar rather than a full cup, with a broken line border, encouraging readers to cut it out, laminate it, and save the recipe. Miss Burroughs wrote, "This could be the last time we print this recipe, really." And I think you have to sympathize because it's the 80s. You can't just like Google it, you know? So if you don't have it, I don't know. I don't know what you're going to do. You're going to have to knock on your neighbor's door and ask them if they do. Numerous letters arrived in protest. The appearance of the recipe, like the tort itself, is bittersweet. A reader wrote, "Summer is leaving. Fall is coming. That's what your annual recipe is all about. Don't be grumpy about it." Perhaps it has become the adult version of September's shiny new notebook for school, another reader wrote in. Two readers actually sent in poems about the tort. The tort, which is really more of a cake, comes from Louis Levine, a childhood friend of Miss Burroughs, who suggested it for the self-published cookbook they wrote together in the 60s called Elegant But Easy. It was named Fruit Tort and included the fortuitous note at the top, "This deserves a 10-star rating on our list." The recipe wasn't just popular, it was endlessly adaptable. In 1991, a New Age plum tort was published that replaced butter and eggs with bananas and egg substitute. An apple cranberry variation appeared in 1994. Melissa Clark wrote about the ubiquitousness of the tort at Rosh Hashanah celebrations in New York and created her own whole wheat version. As newspaper clippings and recipe files have seeded ground to the web pages and Pinterest boards, this tort has found a new set of admirers, and a recent Google search of the New York Times plum tort yielded nearly 80,000 search results, many of them links to popular food bloggers extolling the ease and versatility of the recipe, myself included. The version here calls for 3/4 to 1 cup of sugar, a compromise that nods to both the first iteration of the recipe in the 1989 tort. So, I'm going to play you now a clip of me making it. This might sound excruciating, but I think it's fun. I made the tort live because I was like, I don't even think I've ever eaten a plum. I did not know how to buy plums. I was not sure what kind. There were multiple kinds. This was shocking to me. And I was like, I don't think this cake is going to hold all these plums. And it did. And it was amazing. So I'm going to go now to you. Cut to this of me actually cooking at home in my kitchen. It's one of the fun things I like to do on the show. I hope you will enjoy. Again, this is Reciprocity Radio on Radio Free Brooklyn. We are a nonprofit radio station, so if you like what you hear, consider giving us a donation or check out our apps. We have them for Apple, and we also have them for Android, and they're both in the App Store. Just look up Radio Free Brooklyn. They're awesome. If you're like, who are you? You can get the app and find our schedule, who I am, what the show is, all that stuff. So check them out, and yeah, enjoy. Here's the famous New York Times Plum Tart by Marion Burroughs. All right, hello from my kitchen. I am about to embark on a very beloved and I'm sure well-known recipe. It is the New York Times Plum Tart from Marion Burroughs. I have never made this. It is very famous. I think it's the most requested recipe in New York Times history, and I am not even sure I've ever even eaten a plum, so I'm going to attempt this right now, and I'm pretty excited to try. This is what I do. I'm just recording literally on my cutting board right here at home, so you're going to hear some cooking sounds. The oven is on, some things are pre-measured, and yeah, I'm going to start this by taking a bite out of one of these plums. Since I'm not really sure how, and they feel very ripe. I think this is a Japanese style plum. The recipe does not specify what type to get, and to my surprise, the store had many types. So I'm gonna try this and tell you how it tastes. But from the get-go, I want to say that this recipe by Marion Burroughs is adaptable. The New York Times even has a article that's linked in the original recipe that says 5 ways to adapt, so you can pretty much use any fruit you have on hand with this one. So I'm looking forward to trying that in the future, but for now, plums, these beautiful plums that I have pulled out of my icebox. Thank you, William Carlos Williams. Okay, here we go. Okay, that's really sweet. But not too sweet. Oh, wow. sour. It sort of tastes like honey. It's really amazing. I was talking to my friend recently, and I was telling him about this description. I might have mentioned this on the show before, from the Chronicles of Narnia. I'm a big C.S. Lewis fan. And there's this book, I think it's called, oh my gosh, what's it called? The Magician's Nephew. It's the first in the series in America. They put them in different orders in the UK. And in that book, it's the actual start of Narnia. And the land is so fertile that things start to just grow out of the ground there, basically. And one of the kids in the book drops a piece of toffee, and the toffee creates a fruit tree that grows toffee. And toffee fruits, not toffee, but toffee-flavored fruits. And this, what I just bit, tastes very much like that to me, or what I imagine that would taste like. So this recipe calls for you to use 24 halved plum fruits. I'm going to quarter these just because these are kind of big. So right now that's what you're hearing me do. Kind of big slices, and I think a quarter will make the kind of nice jammy puddles that have been reported for this cake. So I am cutting up these figs. I'm sort of halving them, ripping the pit from the plums, ripping the pit out, and oh wow, these are beautiful, and quartering them long ways, not halfways, or lengthwise, not halfways. Okay, this one has some interesting red in here. So I post a recipe very similar to this that I make every summer from Smitten Kitchen on Reciprocity Radio, which is what you're listening to. And it's a very similar cake. It's a very simple cake that I've often swapped out the types of fruit with. Her recipe on the website is raspberry buttermilk cake, but I often do blueberries, strawberries, whatever I have. Done cherries before. It's really good, and I make it every summer. People kind of go crazy for it, which is humorous to me. This is kind of like that. It's a really simple cake. There's very little to do. It's just flour, butter, eggs, sugar. I'm really intrigued by the final step of maybe adding cinnamon, maybe adding lemon, definitely adding sugar on the top. And I think it's going to be really beautiful with the skin of the plum fruit sort of facing up out of the tart. But we'll see how this works, since this is new to me, all of this. So, let's see. I also don't know, like, I'm admitting my flaws here, but I really don't know how big a plum is supposed to be. The store had, like, massive ones, and these were the smaller ones, but they're still really big. And even though I'm going to use a 10-inch springform pan for this, and the directions say to use, like, an 8 to 9 to 10-inch springform, so I can fit a lot of fruit with that depth, but I don't know, I'm kind of nervous that this is not going to all fit. I even underbought the amount of plum. So, I don't know, I might just kind of call it and say that I bought giant, really sweet, beautiful plums, but they will overwhelm the cake, possibly, if I use all 10 of these that I got. So we'll see. Okay, so I have like a full bowl of these right now that I've kind of cut up and divided. I think that might do it. It seems like I have like basically 2 cups worth of plum slices, so I'm thinking that's probably enough. We'll see. So yeah, let me read you a little bit about this cake while I start preparing it. So the original recipe was posted, it was printed in the New York Times every September from 1983 until 1989, when the editors determined that was enough times of being printed. And people basically rioted. They were like, no, we want the plum recipe. Please give it back. People wrote into the New York Times. This is obviously before the widely available internet searches that you can do nowadays. But people wrote in hundreds of letters. Some people even wrote poems about the cake. People wanted it that badly. So The recipe was printed for the last time in 1989 to counter anticipated protests. Miss Burroughs wrote a few years later, "The recipe was printed in a larger type than usual and with a broken line border around the edges to encourage actually clipping it and taking it out and laminating it so you can hang on to it for easier use." But the paper was flooded with angry letters, and basically what happened is they had to keep reprinting it, and they kept reprinting it. It was so demanded. So right now I am creaming together the butter and sugar. The recipe, when they reprinted it for the final time, called for 3/4 cup of sugar as opposed to 1 cup. I kind of wanted to cut my losses here, so I used 3/4 plus 2 tablespoons. So that was exactly in between that amount to see how it would come out. So this is getting creamed, as you can hear. I had my butter kind of sitting out, so it was nice and soft. My sugar ready to go. I'm going to add a little bit of vanilla to this. It's not called for, but that is just something in my house that we do. Baked goods, it's always nice. It kind of gives a warm note to bake things. So I'm going to go with 1/2 teaspoon, not to overwhelm the flavor. I'm using natural vanilla extract. So this happens. Let's see what else is on here about this tart. So, yeah, anyway, famous fig tart, plum tart, I keep saying fig, those are different things, clearly. So the first step is cream the butter and sugar in a bowl, and I added vanilla. You can add the flour and baking powder, so let's do that. This is me measuring the baking powder. What you hear in the background is WBGO, that's one of my favorite stations here in New York. Jazz. So that is baking powder gone into the flour. I've already pre-measured, which is very simple, just a cup. This is unusual to me because I usually add the eggs first. But today we're doing this the way it's written, so here we go. Or I might have just massively messed this up. I really don't know. I've never added the flour before the eggs, but this is the way it's printed, so let's do that. Okay, let's do eggs here. It calls for 2 eggs. And you can add a pinch of salt also, which I will do because I like good seasoning. I'm going to add the eggs 1 at a time, even though it does not specify this. It's just the way I usually do it. Okay. So as far as you can tell right now, I've literally made this cake in the time that I've been talking. It is very simple. I was really thinking about this earlier because one of the reasons I started this show is just to sort of explore the power of recipes, the way people share, the way that I'm making this now, just like thousands of people have done before me. I'm making it like 11 on a Tuesday, but people make this for Rosh Hashanah, for Christmas, for brunch, for everything. And I sort of think that's the beauty of this thing, especially beloved recipes, because you're participating in something that so many people have participated in before you. And it's so special. And that's why I wanted to do this show. So I'm awake at 11 on a Tuesday making a cake. But, you know, it really is beautiful. There's something sacred about that. And, like, all these people that clipped this thing, they were so upset that it wasn't reprinted. I think that's really special. So I have just gotten my 2 eggs in there. I'm going to add a pinch of salt because I like savory stuff. And I feel like salt always just makes sugar taste a little bit sweeter. So I added like a good pinch of Maldron. Probably not what you want to use in baking, but it's what I'm using. Right now I have a really pretty thick batter that I have no doubt will stand up to these really juicy plums. So now is the moment of truth. We're going to add this into my spring form, which I'm going to go grab. And then we're going to arrange our plums. And I'll obviously be reporting back to you in an hour to see how this goes. We'll see.
So I'm putting it into a grease pan. It's wider than probably recommended, but this is what I've got tonight. I lost my torte pan, which I think would have been nice for this, but sometimes you just have to go with what you have. And I feel like cakes like this are the perfect example. This is a recipe for the base that you could extremely easily memorize and just dump whatever seasonal fruit you have right on top of. So I always like things like that that are really adaptable and friendly to mistakes and error. This looks really beautiful so far, I have to say. So I think the joy of this cake is that basically you put the plums skin side up, as your quartered or half plums, and they become sort of like this jammy, beautiful thing in the cake. So I'm excited. Also, the finishing touch is very open-ended. Though I tend to write recipes like that, it is slightly intimidating to think about my decisions coming up here after I place the plums, because you can add lemon juice, you can add cinnamon, you definitely should add sugar, I think. I don't think I'm going to do a mixture, but we'll see. Okay, so I've got my bag.
So that was me making a cake in my kitchen. but I hope that illustrates how simple this plum tart. Oh my god, I almost said tart. Plum tart. It's a cake. Let's just call it a cake. The plum cake was, you do not have to use plums. You can use whatever fruit you want. As is written in the original recipe by Miriam Burris, I wrote up that recipe and post about it on reciprocityradio.com, so you can get it there. It is so simple that I basically can't remember it even right now. So it's easy. The batter comes together in seconds and you just plunk fruit on top of it. And you can finish with cinnamon and lemon and sugar, which I did. And that was brilliant. And it made the house smell unbelievable. Like, it's just immediately, like 20 minutes in the baking. It bakes for an hour. So this is a very, I don't know if I meant, I probably mentioned it in the segment, but it's a very sturdy dough, like enough to handle these giant, massive segments of plums. And they cooked down and got all jammy and puddly and perfect. And it wasn't like runny. There was no juice anywhere. It was just like, it was amazing. My next thing that I really want to do with it is whenever we go apple picking come the season, which is fastly approaching, as we know today is very like kind of chilly and nice here in New York. I can't wait to do this with apples and maybe like roll the apples in some cinnamon or whatever and then put them in there. I think it's going to be amazing. So check that out. It's on reciprocityradio.com. Please also like just yeah, check it out. You can contact me there too. There's a whole section on how to email me, find social media, whatever you want. I have an Instagram that I really need to bring back from the dead. But yeah, autumn is kind of like my favorite time to cook. So I'm really interested in hearing from listeners and other friends and family about things you like to make when it's cozy. For me, like I often make Libby's pumpkin pie. Like it takes like a day of it being chilly and I'm like, oh God, I need pumpkin pie. Like I don't do pumpkin spice latte, mostly because I'm a little bit lactose intolerant. But I make Libby's pie like every year the second it gets a little bit chilly. That's literally on the back of the can of pumpkin pie. And I'm really excited to share and coming up as the holidays approach recipes that my family's been making for years that are very simple and exciting. And I'll be writing a little bit more about the cookbooks I talked about today. I got another one that's Indie Rock Cookbook. Maybe I can get Shane to come back and do a crossover episode because I did Everybody Plays the Fool and we did crossover music and cooking and specifically musician written recipes. Also on that, and I need to revisit this too because I have Meat Free Monday, which is the Paul McCartney book, and it's awesome, and I just really need to like, I recommend that so strongly because it really does, it's like weekly meals, and there's a starter, entree and a dessert on everything. It's so thorough and like just really thoughtful. I was supposed to go visit my family on Friday night, and then decided, no, let's do it. Like, we'll take the train up on Saturday morning instead. And this was a good decision because Paul McCartney played Grand Central on Friday. And I'm thinking, like, we weren't going to get, like, the 6:30, 7 o'clock train. I don't even know if you could have gotten in this station. They were announcing on the radio that they had closed doors. I don't know what happened. So I'm very thankful that this scheduling conflict with my family allowed me to avoid the probable chaos. I'm sure it was a really good concert. I think it's on his website. I've been meaning to watch it. But that was like the most random and funny thing that could have happened. It was like, oh, well, we're not going to get the train. That's fine. And then 2 seconds later on the radio, I hear, Paul McCartney's playing Grand Central tonight. Anyway, Meat Free Monday is a great book. I should definitely get more into that and talk about it more since I cook almost, I want to say 80 to 85% vegetarian at home. Probably even more. I don't know if you count eggs, but anyway, thanks so much for listening. This has been reciprocityradio.com. This has been a website talking. This has been Reciprocity Radio. My website is reciprocityradio.com. This is Radio Free Brooklyn. I am here every Sunday at 5, and I'm so happy to be here. If you like what you hear, please check us out. We have apps. We have cool t-shirts. We are a nonprofit. If you donate to us, it is tax deductible, and we would love to have your donations. We are working on a lot of really cool stuff. We are doing a Teens Take the Mic, which I'm like so excited about. So any donations go towards that, which is helping to empower young teenagers and kids to learn how to do this, to be active and have their voices heard and learn all these skills, which is, I'm just staring at the soundboard. Up next is The Far Reaches of Dub with Kin Sounds, so stay tuned for some really good music and keep listening. I'm going to take us out with a song. It's Come On In My Kitchen by Eric Clapton. I'll be back next week at 5. Thank you so much for listening. She